The Economic Development Planning Education Employment Arts and Ag Committee. I'll call the meeting to order, please. Anyone want to make a motion for the approval of the April 3rd meetings?
I'll make that motion.
Okay.
Second.
Second, any revisions or changes? Okay, all those in favor accept as submitted? Aye?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. All right, so now we're going to go right into the resolutions for the May 16th legislative session. Resolution number 86, which is amending the 2023 budget to create two fully reimbursable full-time positions, Ulster County IDA. And then resolution number 87, I've been asked again by the IDA and the legislative clerk to postpone that for one more month. I've spoken to both of them and let them know that this is the last month we'll postpone it. We want these contracts in hand by the June meeting. And so the IDA said they would do that, and I haven't gotten an affirmative answer from our side yet, but hopefully we will soon. And you know, we'll try and get these on the agenda, because I don't like kicking the can down the road here on these, and we've done it for 3 months. So all right, resolution number 155 is setting a public hearing on the sale and or transfer of lands by Ulster County located at 701 Grant Avenue, Lake Katrine, Town of Ulster, to be held on May 16th, 2023 at 7:15. I've been asked by the, I know I sent a note out today asking to pass this, but I have had several conversations with the chairman this afternoon, and she requested that we take no action on this for the time being based on the late resolution that was submitted to us today on 320, and we're going to revisit this if we need to, right, based on the outcome of, you know, what this committee decides on resolution 320 and what the legislature decides on 320. All right, okay, thank you. So we'll take no action on 155. If is that okay with everyone? Vote. All those in favor of taking no action?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. Resolution 285, which is authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement with SUNY New Paltz to provide entrepreneurial and business recruitment and support. So we talked a little about this, right? And this is the, what is it called? The center there. I don't have my full.
Venture Hub.
Yeah, Venture Hub. Yeah. Yeah. Second for discussion?
Second.
Okay. Anybody have anything you want to say about that?
We do.
Okay, go ahead.
So thank you. And it was brought up yesterday at the chair's meeting. And I think all of you are know Josh Stratton-Raynor, who's the acting director now, officially, of economic development. And so Josh is going to speak to that.
Great. Okay, so. Welcome. It's your first time in the committee as an interim director. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank
first
you.
Time in the hot seat.
Yeah. And you know, by the way, you've seen a couple of things that we did with Tim. So just be ready.
No, yeah. 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 Hit me with it. I understand that you had a couple of questions, but I can just briefly go over the context here. SUNY New Paltz Venture Hub. The Venture Hub is a designation from a grant program that they were awarded by Empire State Development. But the hub has been in operation, the Innovation Center aspect of it is from ESD. But the Venture Hub has been in operation for a number of years. And even prior to ESD designation, which is a regional designation, each of the 10 economic development districts for the state get one of these, and the SUNY New Paltz Venture Hub successfully got our Mid-Hudson region designation. So we're happy to have them here in Ulster County. But as I said, they were in operation already for a number of years. Prior to this, we were already primed to support them. We did issue an RFP for these entrepreneurial support services, and they were selected through that RFP process. I believe there were two other applicants, and for various other reasons, you know, out of state, too much over budget, New Paltz was the ultimate selection. So this is the sort of the legislative approval of a scope of services that would essentially codify Ulster County's with some minor contribution to the work that they are doing We are directing those resources in part to Ulster County specific ventures and entrepreneurial support. So by entrepreneurial, essentially, this is a group of businesses that are scalable. That's primarily what they look for in their services. They also agree to expand their scope on a case-by-case basis if they see a sort of cluster of need out there. So they will give us that flexibility. But by and large, this is essentially setting up a referral relationship between us for the businesses that fit into this category of scalability to give them the specific supports that are a little bit outside of the general capability of our department.
Can you talk to how well this project is going to align with the 2040 goals?
Yes, I mean, the 2040 goals speak primarily to identifying the sort of priority clusters, right? And certainly we can see entrepreneurs in any of these clusters. And so, I think we're really excited to see what kind of work can get directed to some of those priorities. But we haven't, I don't think that we have specifically outlined with them, a direction other than the sort of general milieu of the work that we're doing.
It'd be interesting to give them the document and talk that through with them and really say if this is where.
Yeah, I'm sure that
there's a lot of work that went into that project. So.
Right. And we have, we have already a really good iterative relationship with them. They're excited about what this, the scope was written to allow a decent amount of flexibility with the kind of the work. Obviously, entrepreneurialism is an emerging field, by definition, it's something that needs to be responsive to change over time. And so we're happy to, continue to emphasize the work of that plan within our talks with them. But they're very open and accepting to our contributions here.
So I got a couple of questions on the financial impact. So we have 42.3 for 2023, and then only 30 for 2024. So the first thing that comes to my mind is the calendar. When is this contract? It's good from what, June to June, or when, is that what it would be, or
it is
school year, or
right? So it's it was meant to start a little bit earlier, so it's actually backdated to April 1st in the contract. They have already undertaken a good amount of that work, and again, we're trying to really make sure that their services get directed specifically to Ulster County businesses. Mm-hmm. So that was part of what went into that. Dating to April 1st. So in the scope of services, it's currently dated April 1st, 23 to March 31st of next year.
Okay, so then why is next year only 30,000?
Let's see. I don't have an answer for you about that. That's Amanda, do you have any?
So $12,000 less next year, and I'm assuming that would be from January for the full year, right? Which would be another 3 months longer, yet it's $12,000 less, so it kind of doesn't line up there. By caucus maybe we'll get that cleaned up.
Sure.
And if you guys are okay, any other questions about this or comments? Chris?
I've been to the Venture Hub meetings a couple of years in a row, and I like that it'll be Ulster County focused on the entrepreneurial ventures, but the word scalable to me often reminds me of Silicon Valley and unicorns, and sometimes scalability isn't necessarily about huge growth, but maybe a cottage industry that will succeed here, so I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's something that we've had a lot of conversations with them about. Is that and they're not looking for, no one imagines that we're poised to be, a new Silicon Valley just through this contract or through even the work that they're doing. But recognizing that there is actually a gap in services to those sorts of entrepreneurial endeavors that don't fit into the sort of tech overemphasis that we see in the general attitude of the public. Or, so I, you know, we think that it's really important to, you know, make sure that we are, specifically focusing on those who don't have that kind of notoriety that that drives a lot of the attention that you see elsewhere.
So does anyone have any concerns about the numbers not being absolutely correct? Because we're the only committee that's going to see this, right? I don't think this is going to Ways and Means. No, it's only coming through us. So, oh, no, it is going to go through Ways and Means. So we can get this updated by then. Okay, good. That's good news. Okay. Any other comments or questions on this? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, great. Thank you. So we're now into resolution number 286, and that's scheduling a public hearing is required under Article 25AA of the Ag and Market Law on the addition of lands to the Ag districts to be held on June 13th at 7:20 p.m. or as soon as thereafter as the public can be heard, and providing direct notice to be affected municipalities for Department of Planning. So this is just adding Ag districts to the existing.
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Opposed? Okay. Thank you. This is number 287, which is authorizing the chair legislator to call public hearing as necessary to satisfy the public participation requirement of the Community Development Block Grant Program. Motion for discussion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Any comments or discussions? This is a annual rite of passage for CDBG, right?
The requirement here is that we have to have a public hearing to apply, mm-hmm. and we have to have a public hearing when we're implementing the program to talk about how the implementation is going. So yes, we've done this very often.
Yeah, right, okay. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. We're gonna move on to 288, which is approving the execution of a contract for $1,500,000 entered into by the county RUBCO for the Department of Planning. Second?
Second.
Okay. So, Director Doyle, if you wouldn't mind giving us a little bit of a background and just, you know,
sure.
refresh our memories on this.
So thank you for the opportunity. The legislature, in its budget discussions at the end of 2022, decided that they were going to sort of replicate what was then a landlord ambassador program, and they allocated $1.5 million towards that program. And so the budget office decided that that $1.5 million is going to be in my budget, in the planning department's budget, so that's where it sits in the planning department's budget. And we've been working with the executive staff, the sponsor of that original resolution to the legislature, which was Abe Duchatel, to develop a scope of services which sort of mirrors the landlord ambassador program, and also is true to what the legislature, what was the discussion with the legislature with respect to how the program would operate and where the funding, how the funding would be used. So when you look in here, there's two things you have to think about. One is that you do have a requirement that the tenant be income eligible. So that's the first thing that has to happen. The second thing is you do have requirements that this is for small landlords. So the landlord ownership pattern in the county has to be less than eight or less units. So you can't, we're not going to help large landlords. And then you have an affordability time frame, and the affordability time frame depends upon the amount of subsidy that you receive. The other thing that happens with respect to this is that if you don't have a lease as a landlord, you do have to, you then have to enter into a lease. And the affordability period is, I remember, it's between 3 to 7 years, depending upon the income levels of the individual tenants. At 80%, you're eligible for up to $15,000 per unit, and I believe the cap is somewhere in the neighborhood of $40,000 or $50,000 per structure. So if you have four affordable units within a structure, you can think how you can move that needle up. All of them would have to be restricted. The other one that's out there is we've actually created a program for those landlords that have rental units that are operating at 60% of AMI, average median income. That 60% essentially allows for additional money to be used on an individual unit basis so that you can get up to $25,000, as I recall, and I'll go back to the contract, but within the contract there's those levels that are established within the contract. The county, we went to a request for proposal in order to make sure that we had a competitive process in terms of hiring the company. We had two responses to the request for proposal. One was from a company that out of California, which was a software company that manages very large grants, but doesn't manage well the rehabilitation portion of that. There's a substantial amount of handholding that goes on with respect, and not only handholding, but also inspections that have to go on with respect to that. And the other one was RUPCO. The fees in here are substantially similar, if not they're actually less, than the county has paid in the past with respect to its community development block grant program. So under community development block grant program, the eligible fee is 18% of the total amount. This fee is somewhere in the neighborhood of a little over 17% of the total amount. We will run the program exactly like we run the community development block grant program. Well, RUPCO will front the money. The money will be essentially a party contract between the landlord and the contractor, and then RUPCO's party to that contract as well. And then we pay on work done. And then after the work gets done to a satisfactory way, then what ends up happening, all of that material comes into us. And that material, essentially, we're looking at canceled checks. We're making sure that everything's done. We'll file a second note mortgage to ensure that the affordability is maintained, so that there's a recapture if the affordability is not retained. And then we will pay RUPCO for work completed based on their submittals to us as it relates to what they paid the contractor. And then final acceptance is dependent upon the landlord's acceptance as well. And there's testing that needs to be done, whether it be assessed asbestos or lead-based testing. And then the key here is we do have some concerns about tenants being in the building when we're doing rehab work. If we have to do rehab work in the building, we don't believe that the rehab work is going to be that substantial. But we are not going to pay relocation costs. Under federal rules, if you're doing work in these buildings and you have to relocate the tenants, then you pay for that relocation cost. We are not providing relocation costs associated with this contract. So the short answer is we tried to be true to what the legislature approved us for. We did an RFP, a competitive RFP, to work that. The fees being charged by RUPCO are similar or less, actually, than what the county has approved in the past and what the state approves with respect to CDBG. The documentation is going to be substantial. There's a continuing monitoring period to make sure that the affordability remains for the monitoring period. And we have had conversations with the controller with respect to how CDBG has been handled and their confidence in terms of how that works. And they're confident with respect to if we continue to handle it the same way. So we do two signatures on paying, and then that we're paying. RUPCO is fronting that money. We're paying for reimbursing them for that money that's front. Any questions?
All right. So Megan, and then Peter, and then I got one myself. Yes.
So just in the realm of not paying for relocation, does that mean that landlords that are applying for this program would be doing it in units that have already been empty, or how does that work? Because I'm worried about displacement, obviously.
What we think is going to happen, to be honest with you, is that given the amount of dollars that we're talking about per unit at $15,000 a unit, that we're not going to see a substantial right. renovation interior to the unit. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. The second thing is we may see this looked at in terms of major structural changes that have to be done. So we may be doing roofs We may be doing septic systems. So those numbers will grow, and we'll get more apartments for that. So if, for example, if you own a unit and you need a septic system and it's going to cost you $30,000, you may have to commit two units within that are income eligible within your building to essentially move this forward. Mm. One of the things we're not doing is we're not doing, I have two programs I had to remember. We're not doing upgrades to appliances. So we're not considering upgrades to appliances. The original ambassador program also did do work with appliances. The other thing that's different from the original ambassador program that RUPCO ran is they were dependent upon pictures from the landlords in terms of approving the scope of work. Mm. We're not doing that. We were really concerned about the fact that we had eyes on the project, and we're making sure that that's the case. Mm-hmm. So they'll go out and they'll inspect to make sure what's being done is what needs to be done.
Peter?
I have three questions. One of them has to do with the actual language of the program description, which was number 14. I don't know if you can find that. But there were sentences that just stopped, and there were things that were just weren't full sentences, and so you might want to look at that and actually like figure that one out.
Okay, 14?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I can go through that and with you, but is there a goal for the number of landlords that you're trying to capture with this?
No. And the reason for that is it's number of units,
okay,
but not necessarily the number of landlords.
Got it.
Yeah. So it's number of units.
So it's number of units. Okay.
But remember, it's limited to small landlords. So, you know, we're from a marketing perspective, I don't imagine we're going to be doing units for a landlord in this locality and then units for the same landlord in a different locality. Hmm. I don't see that happening.
You don't see that happening because there are landlords who do have multi-unit houses all over the place, right?
And you can also note that we've limited it per structure as well. So if they have seven in a structure, they're only going to get $30,000.
And then I did have a bit of a concern about how do you keep up with income eligibility? Mm. You know, what are you doing? Are you going to tenants and saying, can I see your W-2? I mean, what, that seems intrusive. And I just want to make sure that it's not intrusive for the people who are living.
So in the past, we've run programs where the tenant self-certifies. Mm-hmm. But generally, when CDBG programs are done for homeowners, we do homeowner rental rehabilitation. They submit basically a look at their income tax, and we can certify over that. So it's not that intrusive.
Okay.
And the key here, from the landlord's perspective, is we can use the landlord to help get the information from the tenant, but from the tenant's perspective, they're going to get an affordable apartment that's guaranteed for so many years. So those things have generally worked in the past, certainly from a homeowner's perspective and housing rehab work that we've done. The income certification has not been a burden.
Okay.
So you just said something that I was going to ask about, but you said, so the tenant, what prevents the landlord from getting rid of that tenant if he gets somebody in to keep them under this threshold? Is it locked into individual tenants?
No, it's locked into individual incomes of tenants. So
right.
You're allowed to change tenants out.
Right.
Right, as long as the income levels are the same.
Right.
If there's not the same, or the tenant... or the tenant that replaces them doesn't meet income guidelines, then there's a recapture provision in the contract.
Okay.
The landlord will have to pay us back. Mm-hmm. And that's why RUPCO will monitor that. There's a monitoring provision in the mm-hmm. contract to do that.
Okay.
We've done this with community development block grant funds, mm-hmm. and occasionally we have, in some instances, it's a home ownership program. They'll sell the house. In some instances, a housing rehab program. And that money will go back into the contract, mm-hmm. and then it'll be go out for the same purpose again. That's how it'll work.
So you mentioned that the CDBG grant is 18% and RUPCO is charging 7%. Who administers most of our CDBG grant?
RUPCO does.
Okay.
Generally,
so I'm saying is, so that's, you know, comparing his, say, you know, higher fees to less higher fees, because that came up. You know, the percentage of that That's a large number for
when it is a large number, yeah. But there's a large amount of work here. Yeah. I mean, there's site visits, there's multiple site visits, there's contractor work, there's making sure that the contractor does the work. And then not all of this essentially goes to RUCPRO. There's also fees. So you have filing fees with the clerk's office. You have other types of fees that you have.
And RUPCO covers those in their 17%?
All fees. This literally gets out the door to RUPCO. What you see is what they're getting paid, uh-huh. And regardless of the fees. And then we have a reporting structure so that they can't charge beyond. It's on an individual basis, mm-hmm. So they won't be able to charge us the administrative fees or the program delivery fees beyond the money we pay out. So, for example, they can run up on some, I've seen some bills on community development block grant monies where they're running up administrative fees and program delivery fees that are 30 or 40% more than it's allowed in the contract. They eat that 30 or 40%.
And that's why they charge us 18 on this one and 17 on the next one, just to get it. But that really, in reality, is kind of like how they have to do business, right?
I think when you look at this compared, if you some of the stacks that come in are like this.
Yeah.
That's for a single house.
Yeah.
And they also monitor. We also make sure that they monitor the contractor. So if the contractor quotes a price and the price goes up by more than 5%, they have to come back to us and make sure that 5% is eligible to be funded. Mm-hmm. An example I would give you is sometimes contractors get into roofs. And all of a sudden, it's fascia and it's boards and it's this and everything else. But they'll come back to us and say, "This is where we are," mm-hmm. And we may let them go because we want to finish the roof. We may let them go above the maximum amount mm-hmm. in that instance because we need to finish the roof.
Got you.
Okay. But we've been very successful. We just closed out a home ownership grant for $550,000, a housing rehab grant for $600,000. And we're currently in an $800,000 housing rehab grant with RUPCO right now. Mm-hmm. And we get audited regularly by the state housing community rule comes down, and they audit us regularly on those projects, and we've not missed a beat with respect to those audits, which is why when we apply as a county, we apply with RUPCO as a subrecipient. We've been very successful in getting funding because A, we spend it in a timely manner, and B is that we don't have any findings when it comes to audits.
Right. Okay.
And we also audit RUPCO. You should know that one of our staff from the county planning department actually goes over and randomly pulls files and make sure that all the checklists are done, make sure all the work is done. So not only are we looking at just the payments, we're also looking at all the checklists, the environmental work as well.
Go on one of our meetings. Okay. I think Legislator Nolan had a question.
Yeah. The less than 8 units troubles me because I have in my district a provider that has 20 rooms, and needs a roof. And this would be perfect. But is that going to be excluded, or could they apply based on 8 units? And if they can get the roof for the price that you're able to give them on 8, could they still go?
The short answer is no. We're being true to what the legislature was told the funding was, which was for small landlords. And small landlords have been defined in the previous landlord ambassador program that is that they would own 8 units countywide. So 8 or less units countywide. So we may have some issues when we deal with LLCs, but we're gonna work through that. And RUPCO has indicated that they're gonna work through that as well. So the short answer to your question, if he owns 20, if he's renting
all in one house.
If he's renting 22 units, then the answer, he's renting 22 rooms.
Rooms. Yes,
he calls it the Emerson.
I'm not sitting funny for them. So I'll come talk to you about how.
Yeah, my first reaction is that's a boarding house. It's not an apartment.
That's right.
It is a boarding house.
Yeah. And from that perspective, the eligibility may not be on the number of rooms. The eligibility may be on the fact that it's a boarding house, not an apartment.
Okay. Yeah. I'll come talk to you. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments on this resolution? Okay. So all those in favor?
One thing. All right. If you recall, there was a local law. Make housing a county purpose.
Yeah.
So
Never heard of it.
I didn't either.
Well, I did. And one of the things we need to be careful about, so if you don't see this roll out right away in terms of contractual signing, we need to make sure that that local law is in effect prior to that.
Gotcha.
We started writing this as a transfer to the Ulster County Housing Development Corporation. Yeah. Because it wasn't a county purpose. So I just want to tell you that the legislative action to make housing a county purpose allows you a direct control over this work. So that, nice. Congratulations to you and to Legislator Uchitel for getting that local law and moving it forward. That's great.
And I have a feeling after today's press releases, this will be expedited. Yes. You know, anyway. So any other questions or comments on Resolution 288? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so 289 is the contract. Let's see, so permanent contract for $1,750,000, which is another $250,000 above the last one, entered into by county with RUBCO, Department of Planning.
The county of RUBCO?
Take a motion for discussion.
Motion.
So the plus one ADU program is brand new from the state of New York. It was rolled out late last year, and it provided for municipalities in conjunction with a nonprofit to apply for funding. We had substantial amounts of conversation with HCR in terms of our Housing Smart Communities program, and they asked us if we would be interested in how to frame an ADU program. And we worked with them in terms of trying to make sure that if they did that, that we would be eligible for it. When it came out, the thought was that we would apply with the City of Kingston. RUBCO, just so you know, RUBCO could apply separately. They didn't have to apply with us. They could apply themselves for the money. And in Ulster County, we had that conversation. We thought, given all of the work that we've done and our ability to move paperwork, or I should say our seemingly ability to move paperwork, that the best application, because we've had these conversations with the state, the best application would come from the County of Ulster. So we submitted a joint application between the City of Kingston, RUBCO, and in the County of Ulster for $2 million. And we were funded for $1.7 million. This program essentially doesn't care what the rent is. You got to remember this. For the ADU, the idea here is to help low and moderate income homeowners provide additional funding for them to essentially be able to continue to live and carry their house, while at the same time providing money for the ADU itself. So,
would you mind defining ADU?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
I apologize. If I ever use these kinds of things, please stop me, because I know we say CDBG and community development. Accessory dwelling unit.
Thank you.
Okay. And they can, in this instance, they can be detached. They can be completely. They can be in an accessory building, or they can be within the house itself. Right. The maximum award here is $125,000. The income checks have to go through the work that was done, similar to what we have for the homeowner itself. And then we have no geographic preferences, with the exception that we believe that this is easier to be done in areas that have water and sewer. Mm-hmm. I just want you to think about the idea of an ADU and dealing with a septic system mm-hmm. that needs additional approvals. Mm-hmm. The City of Kingston is participating in this. They anticipate we'll do some in the City of Kingston, we'll do some outside the City of Kingston. We have a marketing plan that's proposed for this. In addition, the City of Kingston is providing direct funding, and they're working with our office and others to do a design competition. So the idea behind the design competition is that we're going to get architects and others involved. There's also a non-professional design competition portion of this, The award, and it's all city money, the award is going to be $25,000. The city and others, some municipalities could do this as well, are going to pre-approve the plans as being stamped and ready to go. So there will not be any review for the plans itself if you use these, if you use the design competition. So that's where we're headed in terms of what we think is happening. Very shortly, you're going to see a press release go out on this. And then from there, we'll start the whole process to try to find the necessary individual homeowners that are income eligible, and try to make sure that what we're trying to do is make sure that we hit what we call census designated places, mm-hmm. which are, to give you an example, Kingston, Ellenville, New Paltz, Stone Ridge, Dampenock, portions of Pine Hill, Shandaken, and Phoenicia would be census designated places. We were originally going to try to limit this to disadvantaged communities, to try to look at what we could do on disadvantaged communities, but it became too geographically compact. So we decided to move to census designated places. Contract follows the numbers in the contract follows the application, with the exception that they've been adjusted for the change in numbers from $2 million to $1.75.
Mm-hmm. So how much does RepCo get for this one?
I can't remember.
So this is pass-through money?
This is pass-through money. Yes, the short answer is yes. This here we've amended the budget. The budget gets amended so that this gets passed through, just like CDBG money mm-hmm. gets passed through. So it resides on what they call the B side of the budget. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't show up in individual departments' mm-hmm. budgets.
Is there a target number of dwellings that you're looking at?
I think we said something in the neighborhood of 14 or 20.
And what do you anticipate actually happening here? What is your, you say you had the perfect execution of this. What would you say would happen, you know, for these 14 homeowners?
So a couple of things I think will happen. One is that the low and moderate income homeowner will be able to essentially find someone, or be able to improve their property so that they have a source of income. Mm-hmm. And that provides an additional housing unit. So these are new units. Mm-hmm. These are absolutely new units. Mm-hmm. And what we would hope to find out is we're going to start to run costs on these as well. I can tell you that if you go on any website and there's a number of resources out there, you can look at the typical cost of these, and they run from $60,000 to $250,000, depending upon the number of bedrooms, et cetera. But you can buy them that, you know, they come in and, you know, they're panelized, or they're prefab or modular or something of that nature. But I think one of the things we hope to be able to do is rehab some garages and make them into accessory dwelling units, and rehab some housing and make them into accessory dwelling units. And then I have a homeowner that can stay in their house, and I have an ADU, which is added to the inventory of housing that's available. Mm-hmm. And if homeowners are smart, they're probably going to rent, particularly if they're elderly, they're probably going to rent to somebody that's going to help them out and be a presence on their property.
Yeah. I mean, can a relative rent from them?
There's no restriction, if I recall. I'd have to go back and look at the grant. The numbers in the grant have a lot of restrictions mm-hmm. in them. But I don't recall a restriction with respect to who you could rent to. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Are there any restrictions on turning these into short-term rentals?
Yes, okay. Absolutely, yes. Positively. They have to be. They have to be.
They have to be short-term rentals.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. And there's also an MWBE requirement as well. Mm-hmm. Since this is a state contract, there's usually MWBE requirements, which are going to be difficult. Yeah. MWBE contractors are not long on the ground.
Is there a cap on how much they can charge per unit? I know that's a slippery slope, but
Kai and I go back and forth on this. I would certainly think that we should limit this to 80% AMI. The contract we have with the state, as I recall, does not. Mm-hmm. I can get that answer for you for sure, mm-hmm. but I don't recall. I recall the income verification here has to do with the owner, not the renter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this has to go to Ways and Means too, and then we'll see it again there and in session. Yeah. Any other questions or concerns or comments on this? I think this is like a home run thing. You know,
it's great.
This solves a lot of problems. I mean, it's not a large number.
Just saying, I have a garage.
You know, yeah.
Could be a great pilot.
Yeah, except for you're not eligible.
You're excluded.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll call for the vote. All those in favor of Resolution 289?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. So Resolution number 319 is setting a public hearing on the tentative budget of the Ulster County Community College for year 2023 to 2024 to be held on June 13th at 7:05 p.m.
Move I'll on. Second it.
Okay, and just so you know, had a meeting with the college last Friday. They have currently a $1.5 million budget gap that they're trying to fill. They were waiting for the state budget to come through, make sure they kept the floor for the, what do they call that? It's a crazy term they use for it. To make sure they gave the same amount of money last year as they give this year. Right. So so that is a concern that I have, that they have that budget gap. There's a possibility that they're going to come to us and ask us for it. And if the folks that were on this committee last year, remember, we offered to give them money last year and they didn't want it. This year I think they do want it. Cause I really, for one, right now, Ulster Community College is number 10 in the state for tuition. Right. And so if they raise their tuition any, right. I don't see the nine above us lowering their tuition, but I certainly can see if they raise their tuition even $5 or whatever the difference would be, then they can't say they're top 10 in the state anymore, right? And to me, that's a big, you know, disadvantage to not say that you're one of the 10 lowest, you know, what, I mean, I guess you could say five or whatever, but I think 10 for some reason is a number that to me means something. So that's out there. So we got to be prepared for that. We're going to try and get the budget. They promised me they're going to get us the budget, you know, ahead of time. And in conversations with Clerk Fabella and Michael, they're working to get us the budget sooner than we ever got a budget before. Actually, most times we get it the night of the vote, right? But we're going to have it in our hands at least a couple of weeks prior, hopefully even more than that. So we can have an opportunity to take a look at the budget and see where, you know, we can maybe say, well, you know, you're buck and a half short here, maybe you might want to look at this or maybe look at that, because they do the budget the same way we do. They have last year, this year, and percentage of what we've used in the current budget, right? So we might have an opportunity to help them with their budget, right? Which is something I think that has been greatly overlooked for all my time in the legislature, is that we never really challenge the college and anything. And they get a lot of money from us, right? We pay a third of their operating expenses every year. Right, all their capital projects come through us, and it's a big deal, right? So just wanted to give you a heads up on that. So all those in favor of setting public hearing on June 13th?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. So the last one is a late resolution that we all got in our email today, and there's a copy of it been distributed this evening, and it was submitted by the executive's office to requesting authorization to commence the process of a direct sale of the property located at 701 Grant Avenue, Town of Ulster, Department of Finance. So obviously there's going to be a lot of questions about that, and the fact that, you know, make a motion for discussion. Let's do that first. Okay. So I've been back and forth with the chair, you know, since this has been proposed. And you know, one of the things that, you know, we're concerned with is like, well, how come we're doing it? Why didn't we do this before with anything? Why are we... You know, why all of a sudden is it okay on this property, but we didn't do it with, say, iPark or the almshouse, for example. For those of us, you were around for the almshouse, you know. You know, that was one that we went through the, you know, local development corporation for. And so for some reason, this one, it's okay. So our attorney, the legislator, our caucus's attorney and legislative attorney and the county attorney have both said that they believe that we can do this. Right, that the county can do this, is sell the property directly. But I just wanted to make aware that, you know, this, to my knowledge, this is the first time that this has taken place. And does it set a precedent going forward for anything that's, you know, auctionable, that we don't put on the auction roll, just sell, you know? And why aren't we doing this all? We probably make a lot more money selling them out, right? Instead of having an auction, we can have a Department of Real Estate, you know, I'm just saying, you know, there's it's a lot more work. I understand, but you know, I'm just saying. I'm just saying, you know, if we can do it for this big parcel, right? If we can put it, we can. You know, we're going to have to go out to bid for a real estate agent, right? And that real estate agent is going to have to come into terms. And you know, when you talk about that kind of money, it's not percentage; it's fees and a cap on how much they can make and things like that, right? And so. The other part of this that I think we need to be aware of is that the legislature has final approval on the sale. That's the number one thing that you have to understand. No matter what the real estate agent agrees to, no matter what happens to be the PSA that comes back to us, you know, we have final approval on that sale. So if we don't like it, we don't have to sell it, right? And so we have final authority on the sale of this property, no matter how it arrives back at us with a potential purchaser.
And it's a majority vote.
And it's a majority vote. Yeah.
And you have done, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Where have we done that? Because I can't remember.
Let me just sort of back up and say, if you remember properties that don't sell at auction, sometimes you essentially go ahead and sell them after they've been up for auction. The Denton parcel is probably the most recent one where you've sold it directly by a vote of the legislature. There are others. Chattahee Lake was a big one.
Yeah. I remember that.
You know, sometimes when you do it, it's after the auction, but you never had to go through the auction. You just did it that way. And then there are other times when, for example, you've decided that it was best to put the property. The example I would give you is the Golden Hill Development Corporation, where you had a piece of property that wasn't. You didn't foreclose on it.
Right.
Well, that's so you different. Put that in the hands of a development corporation when you sold the nursing home.
Right.
And you did that. Same thing with respect to Flatbush Avenue. Do you remember Flatbush Avenue was not a foreclosed property?
It was a health
so right. In those instances, you've decided to use a development corporation to do that. So remember the distinction here is the in-rem properties or the foreclosed properties, which the section of, I forget, it's one something, covers how you deal with your ability essentially to sell without going through auction for in-rem properties where you don't have that ability for properties that the county didn't take in rent, that the county particularly just owned. And there's county law section 215, I think, that covers how you get rid of those properties and you have to surplus them. You know, same thing here.
We got legislator Hewitt, legislator Criswell, or anybody else? I'll go third. All right, go ahead.
I just feel like for something that's setting such a big precedent, the justifications are very weak. Each whereas is a little bit ambiguous, and it's like we're presenting this because we want to, but there's no real justification on why we're selling it. Why we're rushing and creating a precedent for a public hearing. I also think I have a concern about the back taxes of $11 million that built up over time, and it feels like it's being rushed, so we can't look deeply at the books. And there's still an ongoing investigation. I think that we should wait.
I'm not aware of an investigation on that.
The finance director?
Well, that's not this.
Yeah.
That's not this.
Right, but that's the person who's at the helm has $11 million
booked up. Okay. Yep. So let's
start, Chris. Did you want to say something?
Yeah. Just that any taxes was very different from selling it. You know, that those are the books are what we keep. And this is what it is, and trying to market it and find another owner for this for
7.1. So, and the actual taxes I think are closer to $4 million. The rest of penalties,
yeah,
right. I think the actual tax are only about, but they're like $4 million that I've accumulated over the 10-year period.
When you foreclose those, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no.
So when you foreclose those taxes, they're gone. They're not recovered.
We can't get them anymore anyway.
The tax
right
disappears when you
so foreclose. Let's say Chris.
I had two questions. Yeah. One has to do with the current tenants. Is there any sort of protection for them, or if we sell it tomorrow, we boot them out?
No,
we are landlords.
Just as their leases came to us, as we when we foreclosed on it, I believe the law is that they go with the building, so to speak.
Okay.
That's what IPARC did.
They
honored any lease that was in place. That's not to say that a potential buyer has to honor them. I don't think they have to, right? I mean, I don't know that.
The county, and that's been discussed at length. If repairs were too much money or anything like that, that the county wouldn't go ahead and say 60 days and evict the...
I mean, these are questions, you know, I agree with both of you, you know, so these are questions that maybe we want to get answered by Ways and Means, you know,
right.
Because one of the things that the chair and I discussed about this particular thing is the necessity to do it as quickly as possible, because we're racking up bills over here like crazy, right? And we're just going to keep racking up bills over there, right? And, you know, we are not landlords, and we shouldn't be landlords, right? And so this, you know, there's a school of thought that said at the moment we foreclosed, we should have done this, right? I mean, I'm in that school, quite honestly. You know, and there's argument for, well, we need space, right, in different places. But, you know, that place needs some work. I don't necessarily agree with the assessment that was given to us by Deputy Executive Kelly of needing a new HVAC and a new roof and costing millions and millions. I mean, it could be. I don't know. But I haven't seen that documented anywhere. It's just been in conversation, right? And so to say that it needs, you know, pretty much the equivalent in investment to bring the building up to speed as is owed in back taxes is, you know, that's a, you know, quite a number there, right? Well,
the HVAC system is, our buildings and grounds, he'd never seen anything quite in such bad shape. Mm-hmm. And also the mechanical, the HVAC contractor that was on site in order to try to somehow get it working. Again, there's no reason why this should work. And, you know, there's really zero guarantee that it will work, even, you know, trying to do their best to put it together. Mm-hmm. So that's where, honestly, the 60 days kind of, that's something that's in our heads about, you know, is this, are we going to get to a point where this is unrepairable, mm-hmm. it's hot, and we need to evict people mm-hmm. within 60 days. Mm-hmm. So that's how tentative the whole situation is and how bad the facility is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't have very much of a, there was a comment made about a budget for 701 being like the back of a napkin, right?
Yeah,
that it was on the back of a napkin. Well, now the napkin is like smaller than a cocktail napkin. You know, like mm-hmm. there's not a lot of leeway in order to fix things. Mm-hmm. So we're in a pretty precarious place with the tenants, and as far as hoping that we can get through the summer months.
That's it.
So we just okayed a pretty hefty contract with the property manager. Do we have a 60-day out on that contract?
I think it's 30 days, isn't it?
30 days?
Yeah, usually 30. Any contract.
That's baked in there.
Again, that's only about $4,000, maybe a little bit more of that is fee for the property manager. The rest of that is kind of pass-through payments, and there's no additional fee by the property manager for like. Yeah.
She's just paying the bills.
Okay.
Yeah. Making sure everything gets done.
If we sell it immediately, we don't all of a sudden have these outstanding
some
payments.
Or
yeah,
something.
Exactly.
You better hope you can sell it immediately.
I'll add to make sure the committee's good. Tom, any questions? No. Megan, any questions? Chris, any more questions? Herb, any questions? Okay, so go ahead.
Yeah, just my thought in response to Legislator Chris Wills, Hewitt's earlier comments is I see this resolution as just authorizing this process. And yes, I think we should have been clear about that before we foreclosed, because then the foreclosure makes more sense. So maybe if there was an intimation of that. But this is just to say this process is okay. There would still be places where the whatever sale we were contemplating would come back to us, I presume.
No, absolutely. We have in the law that's attached to this, it explains fully.
We have to vote on it.
That
right?
We have, the legislature has to vote on the sale, no matter what it is, right? So
if we think it's a bad deal at that point, we get a chance to do it. But there has been the sense that this kind of sale would have to go through the IDA, and this is clarifying and instantiating, no, it doesn't have to, and we want to do it this way. Because that way takes long, long periods of time during which all these costs are accruing, and so we want to do something different than the usual on this. And really, this, as I think Chair Cahill suggests this could become the norm. There's advantages to going the other route, as in that we're not very good landlords and we're also not very good real estate agents or business. So let people who have a little bit more expertise in that do it. But in this case, I think our hand is forced.
Mm-hmm. And again, so this has to go through Ways and Means as well, I believe, right?
Yeah.
So if you come up with any questions, if we pass it here tonight and you come up with any questions, it's going to go through Ways and Means two times before next session. So let's make sure that we get them out there if we approve it or don't approve it either way. If we don't approve it, don't go to Ways and Means. So, any other questions or comments? Okay, I'll call the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. So that's it on our resolutions. Is there any new business that any of the legislators want to bring up today? Legislator Hewitt.
I'd like to talk about the timeline of our work with Henry and Charlie and hemp industry in general. I spoke to the Chair Cahill earlier about some of our meetings, and our meeting in Needleman. Tim was very interested in the hemp industry. It's called long fiber industrial hemp, and it's a specific plant that grows really long, doesn't have branches 4 feet off the ground, so that those long fibers can be used for paper, packaging, clothing, fabrics. And then there's a whole potential on fuels and plastics and 3D printers with hemp substrate. So I feel like it's a cottage industry for our county that's going to be not only great for our farmers, but for the packaging that's required from the dispensaries. The governor is requiring hemp packaging, papers, and we can really localize our economy through this industry. So I just wanted to mention that some of your proposal is very ambitious and it's well written and robust, but we want to make sure that we're taking the right steps, and I think a good next step is meeting with Chair Bartels, talking about how the Economic Development Committee can support funding in machines and an innovation lab. So that, for example, the kind of substrate on 3D printers is a little bit sticky and can gum up the machine, but we can work with scientists to bring in experts from around the world to make a better substrate. And so I'm not talking about soap. The sky's the limit right now because we lost this product for over 80 years through Prohibition, and now the real experts are in Romania and China and places that didn't prohibit the product. So we're going to have to bring in experts and scientists and invent things and recreate a whole economy. Even I was thinking this morning, we can pave rail trails with a hemp substrate, and you know, it could be our future.
You could make a geotextile fabric out of it.
Yes, all kinds of stuff. Were you thinking ARPA funds for this? No, I think more what Tim was recommending is because the Workforce Innovation Center is moving forward to create jobs and entrepreneurial opportunities. Mm-hmm. It could be funding existing through workforce already. Mm-hmm. But really what Megan and I and Herb have been talking about is a hemp decorticator, and now I've learned about a hemp spinnery, which can make the production of jeans possible. Mm-hmm. So the spinnery takes the long fiber and makes beautiful fabrics. So we want to buy some.
We have an amazing fashion program at SUNY Ulster. Mm-hmm.
So I'm just trying to get my head around what the county's role in this will be. One of the things in your proposal was something about iPark 87. iPark 87 is privately owned, and we have no input as to what's going in there. If the county does enter into a lease agreement, then that might be something that we could consider including in the space that we use there. But currently, we have no space there, and we don't own anything over there. Everything has either been transferred to iPark or is in the process of being transferred. And we have one last parcel that's in we have a 45-day waiting period from the time we approve it for sale till we actually transfer the deed. And the last parcel is in that 45-day waiting period right now. So we really don't have any, other than if we do, you know, the Innovation Center, if that's where we decide that that's going to go, then it would be part of that. But it's not necessarily at iPark. The other part is, I think you guys got to work a lot closer together to give us a much more, you know, formulated plan as to how this is going to roll out and how the county can sponsor it. Because right now it's a great idea. I don't disagree with anything that anyone said. And I think there is validity to the fact that this is something that is probably going to be a growing you know, thing in the future. We have a couple of hemp farms in Ulster County now, I believe, right? There's some out in Gardner, I think. Is that where they are?
There are farms. They're mostly focused on CBD at this time.
Oh, yeah, okay.
For the entire state of New York, there were around 30 acres that were grown last year. Uh-huh. It primarily has to do with the idea that to avoid the debacle with the CBD industry, the approach we're taking now is a bit more holistic.
Yeah.
It's a complete ecosystem.
Uh-huh.
And what that basically means, for example, today, we had an extensive conversation with the person who's going to be our lead farmer. And that person is going to need to spend time with farmers preparing the plant this year. We have a great announcement about to make this week. A fellow named Michael McDonough is going to join the team to help with some of the research focused on the science. He's an architect around the installative work we've already done that we've represented in the Hemp House.
You say Michael McDonald?
McDonough.
Oh, I thought McDonald's. So you could sing a couple songs for us.
No, not that one.
Not that one. Yeah. And by the way, you're in a perfect building to, you know, in Cornell Cooperative here. They probably have some expertise they can lend. Although they concentrate on fruit, they probably have at least some information to help with that as well, right?
Professor Smart at Cornell is very intelligent on hemp and industrial hemp.
Yeah. So again, so I think that, like, you know, if we see something a little bit more, you know, glued together that we can say, you know, let's move forward with this, something we can get behind, because your plan is very ambitious. I can tell you right now, there's nothing that's going to happen to summer of 23 that's going through this legislature right now. That's, you know, pretty much a reality of the way we do things. It just takes a little bit longer. There's no funding and things like that. We have to put all that stuff in place, right? So again, if you guys can get together, the Office of Economic Development and Deputy Executive Law, you know, if you guys wouldn't mind sitting down and seeing if what you can bring to the legislature, work on, you guys obviously, you know, are involved and continue to be, you know, because we do want to, you know, I think that would be a good place to start, right? You know, and I would reach out to the IPARC folks independently too, by the way, you know, because they're looking, you know.
And if you're looking for a building, there's one on Grant.
But you need a lot of money to fix it, though.
Yeah, right. Well, Sam, we'll add this, that for a professional scale decortication facility, the teams we've been talking with, and I say this speaking as a former president of the U.S. Hemp Building Association and also the person who went through the certification, did the final arguments, there are people that are preparing to fund decortication facilities at a $3 million plus level. So they're ready to put in the capital improvements, et cetera, et cetera. So part of the question that I'll be looking for an answer to is, where is an ideal location for a facility? Like, some think, well, maybe we should look over there on Aluminum Ave in Ellenville. Mm-hmm. Others think other locations.
Mm-hmm.
I was driving along and looking and thinking, I wonder what it would look like to have a facility near either Highland or Sophus or somewhere in the area.
Mm-hmm.
So we're open to suggestions.
Yeah, that's good. And that office has all the availability of everything.
Yeah, certainly site searches is a huge part of it. I know that you had conversations with Tim. I was not privy to them, and I'm still playing catch up on some of these matters. But, yeah, I mean, I'm certainly excited about the construction contributions there and hearing about some of the other possibilities or, you know, could be a really great fit. I was not aware about the cannabis packaging even, so we've been taking a close look at what kind of support services are needed to strengthen that cluster that we know is coming quickly.
Nice.
So that's
Megan likes to talk about hemp adjacent industries, so even
fashion
at SUNY Ulster is a great example.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Is the growing facility indoor?
No, it would be an outdoor grow and a processing facility that would take in bales. The goal is to get some seeds in the ground this year, working with farmers that already have licenses, just so we get some experience with what the process
would be. Hepworth Farms, Hepworth Farms, I think, has a license, I'm not sure.
We do.
I thought they did. CB.
I just did the processing facility there, we just approved it.
Yeah.
So when I, say probably about 5 years ago, I think one of the Boyce families rented their farm to a hemp grower along the thruway there.
That was Amy.
Yeah. I smelled it for a week, so I know. You know, guy don't live far from there.
Empire State Growers. Empire. She created a whole collection.
Yeah.
Right. So now, why don't they go back there? I'm just curious. Is it the cost?
Well, what Henry talked about with the debacle was everyone thought everyone was going to get rich on CBD when it was selling well. Yeah. So all the farmers got into it, and there was way too much biomass to process.
Yeah, I can give you a short example of what we've set up. We've been working on this since 2019, getting ready for this phase. Back last year, we had an investor from California who was ready to invest. He said to me over dinner in California, he said, well, Henry, why don't we just build processing facilities? Because if we were to talk to some of the doctors involved with this, they would recommend that you have a facility within, I don't know, 100 or so miles of where you're growing to reduce the CO2 footprint, et cetera, et cetera. I told him it was too early because we needed to clarify market demand. What's happened in the last couple months with the calculations we've done is based on some NYSERDA data and CLIPA data. If you take their numbers, if we're really going to achieve that 2030 number, what you're talking about is a market size that's $2.2 billion per year. What that basically means is we need to be insulating on the order of 200,000 units every year. Of course, we're getting none this year for the most part, so that means we're going to be north of 300,000 units to New York statewide for next year. Now, what we're showing is that you can actually use hemp as insulation from the outside. So what we're doing this summer is an experiment, but working with experts to show how we could do it to stand up a new industry. If we're successful at that, that alone is going to drive the factory. That'll be enough to start it up and create visibility so others can decide how they want to take product off the line, like including erosion mats and trail coverings, et cetera, et cetera.
Have you worked with Novo at all in the Farm Hub or discussed this with them at all?
No, not yet.
That might
be. Looking at other grants. We have a fairly diverse team in place now. Yeah. And so we're working with Chris and we're talking with Tim. So once we have the next meeting, I think we'll talk about site targeting and then from there we'll know how to put together a reasonable budget.
Yeah.
We spoke to Seed Song Farm and Creek is willing to make space available for planting, but Farm Hub would be amazing because they're about research and development.
And they can pay for things.
What about the Bird Rock?
All kids are.
Yeah, they got lots of land, don't they?
And skills. Yeah, I mean, so.
And need. What do they call it?
Woodcrest.
Are you talking about the one in Rifton or the one here?
Both.
Both. They're different.
The one here is what
different
I was
same community.
They're different communities.
Yeah, they're two different communities. So you have, what is this one called?
The Mount Academy.
The Mount on 9W. Yeah. And then you have the Bruderhof, which is on 213 in
Woodcrest.
Woodcrest.
I'm going to her breakfast next week if you'd like to come with me.
I would like to go.
Something.
I'll say yes.
I think Novo is more about food, you know, and other things, right? But I don't know.
But they're also building their metro center, which is an innovation makerspace.
Right. Where are they building that?
It's Greenkill across from Boulder.
Oh, right. Yep. Right. The old Metropolitan.
I'm on the board at Seed Song, and so I'm meeting on Monday. We'll talk about is incorporating this within the plan. And the thought was we also have an avenue for ecotourism. So, in other words, the thought was, what if, as we plant, we put some place for people to come in and plant so that the farm.
So, Seed Song is the one that's at the bottom of Esopus Avenue at Town Bolster. Yeah. So, you know, this is how things like this happen. You know who owns property that borders that, right? iPark. So you know, so there's a opportunity to maybe do something there.
Throw seeds like that.
Yeah, and then I mean, iPark for the
there's that's part of the land that was transferred. It's not in the floodplain, but it's the same land as the Hepworth farm. You know, it's just on another meander bend, and there's like 60 acres back in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, that I think there's provisions in the master plan for that eventually to be recreational field, but there's no reason why it couldn't be cultivated.
That's an awfully big recreational field.
Right.
Yeah.
And also...
Multiple. Yeah, I mean, I know that the initial thought from the supervisor... this is prior to the Kingston Area Soccer League purchasing the property out on Cuckoo Lane and building their soccer fields, which they've done, was to do that, to move them from the property where the housing's going to go at I Park down at the bottom there and, you know, put the solar in and, you know, put the recreational fields there, put some trails there. There are trails there. There's a kayak launch there already. There's softball fields, basketball court. So, you know, I think it's an opportunity, you know. And, you know, for iPark, that's like zero investment, you know.
And what we'll do is everyone posted on our meetings, and I think it's coming up.
All right. Thank you very much. Again, you know, I think that, you know, hopefully I'll be able to vote on something before I go. You know, I'm leaving in December, but, you know.
Yeah.
Can
we recognize our other guests? Yes. Yes. Introduce yourself, please.
Thank you so much.
Yep.
My name is Katie Spatchelders. I'm from Rosendale Library. I'm the president of the Ulster County Library Association. And I visited some of you last November at this meeting, and I talked about transparent language, which is this online language program, which we are now launching officially. It's launched. And so people can learn over 100 languages on their mobile devices or computers, and it has more English language learning than any,
right.
Well, especially the program that we already have. So people can learn, people from Afghanistan, for instance, mm-hmm. can learn English, and Ukrainians. And so, you know, it's a real resource for people who are just arriving and don't have a lot.
So I think this committee increased the funding for that specific program in the last budget cycle, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so
that's great.
It's up and running, and we're really excited about, you know, spreading the word, but, you know, we need your help. And, you know, whatever you can do or suggest to help us.
Yeah, so maybe we can link up with the clerk's office to do a joint press release or something that say that, you know, that it's mm-hmm. coming out there.
Yeah. You know? I mean, we've done a press release just recently, but in a PSA on Radio Kingston.
Yeah.
But, I can contact them. That's okay.
Yeah. And then together, you know, you get the power of the legislature. Not that there's that much there, but, yeah. But at least, you know, the newspapers will get it and maybe look at it. You know, you never know. And anything we can do, you know.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your support.
Yep.
Thank you for allowing me to.
Yeah, you're welcome. And thanks for coming all the way out here to Apple Orchard. Yep.
Yeah.
By the way, I love the Rosendale Library. It's a great little library.
Thank you.
Really, really gem in that community.
Thank you.
As a
I'm sorry if it wasn't bad
either. Okay, so is there any old business that we need to discuss this evening? If not,
hearing none, I'll make a motion for adjournment.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much. And again, thanks everybody for coming out here.
Thanks
for
organizing.
To Cornell for hosting us.
I'm like,